wait a minute, we were essentially denied our constitutional right to a fair trial.
We can give at least some measure of peace to their families who've lost so much.
What prevented the attorney from doing that in this case was the judge.
Whether or not a case can continue to be heard in a court really is a matter of state law.
The police records, the prosecutorial records from this case have never been turned over to the defense.
The truth needs to be told.
We've been fascinated by a feature of the Marshall Project's exploration of the criminal justice system in America. Andrew Cohen periodically writes a commentary called Case in Point, one case highlighting one aspect of the justice system. Today, it's the story of Nathaniel Epps and his brother-in-law, Persil Warren. Both are dead, but the issues in their cases are very much alive. They were convicted in 1996 of raping a Norfolk, Virginia woman. In 2012, Persil Warren died of cancer in prison, just a year before advanced DNA testing could have exonerated him. And Nathaniel Epps passed away earlier this month, a week after being diagnosed with liver cancer and several years into fighting what his lawyers believe was a wrongful conviction. The Marshall Project's Andrew Cohen spoke to us about this case, which involves the impact of new DNA technology developed after these men were convicted. And equally important, says Innocence Project staff attorney Olga Axelrod, is the availability of proper health care to keep inmates alive long enough to benefit from this kind of new DNA evidence.
Technology wasn't quick enough. The advancements in technology wasn't quick enough to give them a substantive day in court that, look, either would have helped exonerate them or would not have helped exonerate them, but at least they would have gotten them into a courtroom with a judge in Virginia saying, all right, here is this new ripple to this case, this new possibility that they did not commit the crimes at all.
There have been cases where people were exonerated after their death in a court of law. That occurred in Texas in the Timothy Cole case. It occurred in the Frankly Smith case in Florida. And there are also cases where governors have pardoned people posthumously as well. Certainly from our perspective, it's very important to continue the fight to clear Mr. Epps and Mr. Warren. We feel very strongly that the DNA here is powerful evidence of the innocence of both of these men. And we can't give them back the years that they lost. We can't give them back their freedom now or the ability to begin to rebuild their lives with their family. But we can give them back their good names. We can give them back their reputation. We can give at least some measure of peace to their families who've lost so much.
Does the law recognize that a verdict needs to be pursued to the truth, whether the defendant is around or not? In other words, is that principle such a big deal that you can't really render something like this moot, even though some people might view this as an administrative waste of time since the defendants are both gone?
The law generally, judges generally, are very receptive to mootness arguments in situations like this. Olga's right that it is state by state and that there sometimes are political movements as well as legal ones that sort of put pressure on judges to look a different way at these cases where there's been a death before there's been a potential exoneration. I don't know if that's going to happen here in Virginia. There wasn't a recantation by any of the witnesses. You know, there wasn't a confession by some other perpetrator stepping forward. It isn't as clear cut as some of the other cases we've seen like this. On the other hand, there are still now profound questions about the validity, the accuracy, the reliability of the convictions here. One of the things I wrote about in the piece that I think is very important that shouldn't be forgotten is the notion that post-conviction, the records, the police records, the prosecutorial records from this case have never been turned over to the defense. Now, they may buttress the prosecution's theory, they may be nothing, or they may show something that actually supports the theories that this new DNA evidence seems to support. And if that's the case, you get even a bigger story or bigger angle to this story. So I'm hopeful that this case isn't just automatically denied or rejected as moot. I think there are issues that need to be explored, but I think the judges tend to, in these sorts of situations, say, you know what, I have enough on my plate, I'm going to go in a different direction.
I do think it's important to note, however, that in the vast majority of these post-conviction DNA exonerations, you actually don't have a recantation by a witness, or you don't have a victim that says, oh my gosh, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. The reality is that we see mistaken identifications in a very large percentage of these cases in about 75% of the cases. And in these mistaken identification cases, it's not because the victims intentionally lied, but rather that memory is quite fallible and it's quite malleable. And most of the time, even where you have the most clear-cut DNA result showing that somebody is innocent, the victim doesn't say, oh my gosh, you're right, I made a mistake. The image of the person who they believed to be the perpetrator is literally etched in their mind. So we absolutely do not expect victims to say, my gosh, I made a mistake. Most of the time they don't. But the DNA here, nevertheless, is quite powerful and overcomes all of the much less reliable evidence that was used to convict these guys.
Olga, if a judge says to you, you know, we have a lot of cases on the docket here. We've got a lot of serious stuff that we're dealing with here. We really can't be concerned with this case that's academic at best and moot at worst. What's your argument?
Well, my argument would be that the DNA here proves that a wrongful conviction occurred, and the truth needs to be told. Whether or not the defendants have passed, they still have families who have, you know, a real interest in having the truth spoken.
And there's a rapist out there.
Absolutely. Justice was not done for anyone in this case. It wasn't done for the defendants, and it wasn't done for the victim.
Olga Axelrod is senior staff attorney for the Innocence Project, and Andrew Cohen is commentary editor at the Marshall Project and author of Case in Point, a biweekly column which sheds a light on a single case or character from the criminal justice system. Thanks to both of you for a fascinating discussion.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.